From the NBC University Theater in Hollywood, we bring you Mr. Donald Crisp, starring in How Green Was My Valley by Richard Llewellyn. This is the story, then, of a valley in Wales and how the Morgan family lived there some 50 years ago. A story that was first published as a novel in 1940 and was then hailed as one of the most beautiful narratives of the year. The beauty of the narrative has been preserved, we believe, in today's adaptation by B. Edgar Marvin. Shortly after the publication of the novel, How Green Was My Valley was made into a motion picture of distinction, in which the part of the father was played by the eminent character actor Donald Crisp. For his playing of that role, Mr. Crisp won an Academy Award. Today, Mr. Crisp returns to How Green Was My Valley, but in a different role. He will be heard as Hugh, the narrator, who looks back over the years to tell the story of the valley and how it was. At intermission, we will bring you a recorded commentary by Professor Beaumont Brustel on the writings of Richard Llewellyn. Here then, Donald Crisp in How Green Was My Valley.
I am standing now outside the door looking down the valley, seeing in my mind's eye as I saw them 40 years ago, all the men coming up black with coal dust, walking bent-backed because the street is steep and in those days it was not cobbled. All the women used to dress up specially in their second best with starched stiff aprons on Saturday mornings, for then the men were paid when they came off on their midday shift. They put their chairs outside their front doors and sat there waiting till the men came up the hill. Then, as the men came to their front doors, they threw their wages, sovereign by sovereign, into the shining laps. And up and down the street you would hear them singing and laughing, and in among it all the pelting jingle of gold. A good day was Saturday then. Indeed, Saturday dinner was always special. I remember the first Saturday dinner my biggest brother, Ivor, missed. I thought my father would be very angry. But he only laughed and said,
"Bet, we will be losing Ivor before long now, you will see. He will be the first."
"Well, it's about time indeed. I wondered how long. Who is she?"
"Bet, that I don't know. And I shall not ask. When the time comes, we shall learn it in the proper fashion."
Forget Bronwyn, as she was when I saw her coming up the hill with the double basket on her hip. She had a straw bonnet with flowers down to her cheeks and broad green ribbons tied under her chin and blowing about her face. Even though the hill was steep and the basket big and heavy, she made no nonsense of it. Up she came, looking at the houses on our side, till she saw me peeping at her from her doorway, and she smiled.
"Hello, Hugh. Hugh, why do you run from me? Oh, have I frightened you then?"
"Mama, Mama, what is it with you? Why do you hide behind my skirts, Hugh?"
"Hugh, boy, that's not manly, is it?"
"No, Donna."
"Then what causes you to do it?"
"This is Morgan."
"Bet, there's a young girl at our front door."
"Bronwyn, it can be no one else. Is that you, Bronwyn?"
"Yes, Mrs. Morgan."
"Oh, come in, my child.
There is a beauty. Is it she who frightened you, my boy?"
"I have two daughters now. Let me kiss you, Bronwyn."
"Ivor! Ivor! Come to the parlor."
"Yes, Dada."
"Bronwyn? Oh, my darling, you've come."
I think I must have fallen in love with Bronwyn then. And I must have been in love with her all my life since. It is silly to think that a child could fall in love. But I am the child that was. And nobody knows how I feel except only me. Daddy was the brain of our family. He always wanted to go in for doctoring. But Dr. Richard said he was too old. He began to get moody soon after Ivor's marriage to Bronwyn. On one night at supper table, it came out.
Dada,
I am not a bit happy.
I am sorry to hear that, my son. What is wrong here?
Everything. Everything. And yet nobody seems to notice. And if they do, nothing is done.
Let me hear you. And if it is something a man can do, you shall have it done.
No, Dada. There is nothing you can do. It is something for all of us. Next week, our wages are going to be cut. And then look. The ironworks here are closing. Are the men from the ironworks going to Dowlais, or are they going to the pit for work?
Well, wherever they will find work, I suppose.
To the pit. And the pit is well supplied with men. You will have some of these iron workers offering to work for less. And the manager will agree. And the older men and them with more pay will be put outside too. And you will be one if you are not careful.
Very silly you are, boy. Come on, Beth. Give us a cup of tea, will you?
Just as Davy said, so it happened. The iron workers started to work in the pit for not much more than some of the boys. A lot of the older and better paid men got discharged. My father worked on the surface as a checker. When the coal came up, he put down how much was in the tram and who had worked it. They were paid from his sheets. So he was kind of a dealer among the men. He and two others went to see the manager. He came back grim and tight-lipped.
Daddy, you're going to strike.
Strike? All right, Dada. But have you decided what you will do when you have your discharge?
I will have no discharge. But we will have proper wages and no terms that are not agreeable to us all.
Stay out of it, Dada. Let me do the talking.
I'll not. The men have asked me to put their case, and put it I will.
The strike lasted for 27 weeks, right on into the winter. Then the owners came down from London, and my father went to see them by himself. When he came back, he had a queer look on his face. But all he said to Mother was,
"We have finished the strike, Beth, but our wages must come down. They are not getting the price for coal that they used to, so they cannot afford to pay the wages they did. We must be fair, too."
The men went back the morning after my father had spoken to the owners. And I remember the hill as they went down. It was early morning and cold, and the moon had not yet gone down. White frost was hard and thick on the roadway of roofs, and all of the lit windows threw orange patches all the way down. As the doors opened and the men came out, their wives and children followed them into the road and stood to watch them go. My father was one of the first with Davy, and as soon as the men saw him, they...
I did what I could, and I claim no glory for the result. It is poor enough, I know. So, let us go back to work and let us forget.
The bells were ringing merrily, merrily, ding, 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 dong, bell, ding, the birds sing.
I looked at the smooth blue sky and the glowing white roofs. The black road choked with blacker figures of waving men passing down the hill between groups of women with children. All of them flushed by flickering orange lamplight flooding out from open doorways. And I heard the rich voices rising in many harmonies, borne upward upon the mist which flew from singing mouths. And my heart went tight inside me. And round about us the valley echoed with the hymn. And lights came out in the farms up on the dark mountain and down at the pit. The men were waving their lamps, hundreds of tiny sparks keeping time to the beat of the music. Everybody was singing. There was peace again. But my father, as the leader of the strike, did not get off so easy. I came upon him a few days later, standing in the rain, checking a tram into his book held under the fold of his sopping coat. He was standing in a puddle made by the drips that fell from his coat, and his hair was plastered down his face. They had taken his hut away from him.
nothing without a fight. Do you think I will allow my father to stand like a dog in the rain and not raise my hand to stop it?
Leave me out of it, Daddy. I can take care of myself.
But, Dada, you will die of the cold. Let us all stand together, and you will see how they will act then.
Hist, Owen, be quiet.
It's no use one pit coming out. It must be all the pits at once.
If I freeze to death, no matter. You shall not make me an excuse for more striking. Be silent now.
The owners are fools.
Owen, you will speak when you are asked, and not before.
I will speak against anything I know to be wrong.
Not in this house.
In this house and outside.
Leave the table.
I will leave the house.
Gwilym. Owen, tell Dada you're sorry.
If you two leave this house, you will never come inside again.
We have done nothing, and if table manners prevent the speaking of the truth, I will be a pig.
And so will I.
Get your clothes and go.
Oh, Gwilym.
Goodbye, Mama.
Goodbye, Mama.
Gwilym.
Come, Hugh. We will go up on the mountain and find peace. Come, my son.
We went up the mountain and Father sat for a long time saying nothing. When we came down again, we saw a big crowd gathered, and there was Devi standing in front of them. He saw us and waved. And one of the men came over.
Mr. Morgan, Daddy wants you to come over if you will be so kind.
What Daddy want with me?
The men are over from all the other valleys, and he's going to address the meeting in a minute, Mr. Morgan.
Very lucky the meeting is. Very well, Mog. I will go. Take care of you for me, will you?
I slipped away from Mog and ran towards the front. As soon as I could see my father through a little space in the men, I stopped where I was. Davy came forward and held up his hands.
Boys, before you make up your minds properly to do what you think is right and best, it is certain you should have a word from my father, Gwilym Morgan. Fair play now!
I am here by some happening which I will call the will of God. I did not want to come, but now I am here, I will give you what has been in my mind these months. You are right in what you want, but you are wrong in your ways of getting it. Force is no good to you until you have tried reason. It is no use to say you will all go together in a union if you have no notion what a union is to do. The owners are not all savages. Reason and civilized dealings are your best weapons. And if your cause is just and your consciences are clear, God is always with you. And no man will go far without him.
Before I could move, one of the men noticed me and held me up above his head.
Put me down! Put me down!
Morgan, here is one who will go without when you tighten your belt. And there are five of mine.
The owners must have found out that my father was against the union idea, because as soon as old Mr. Rice, the superintendent, died, my father was offered his job. He took it. Being superintendent made my father next to the manager and one of the most important men in the village. But at the same time, the men began to think he had gone in with the owners. The first few days they passed him without greeting. But the days stretched into a week and more, and still the men were not speaking to him, except in matters of work.
Davy, what is this about your father?
It is very strange Dada was chosen for super, when everybody knows he is my father.
Why is it strange, boy?
Because I am the union rebel to the owner, and Dada is known to be against me. Dada was picked to slap my face on the boys who are with me.
Oh, there is nonsense, boy.
Mama, the men are ugly, and they are in a mood to be dangerous.
If Davy had not been strict with them, he would have been put over the bridge long ago.
Oh, is it like that with them? Oh, Davy, my little one, I thought it was only talk.
If the men thought anybody would stop them, they would have them, my father or not.
Do you know where the men are meeting tonight?
Yes, Mama. Up by Jones, the Chapel Sea.
Up by there, is it? Now look, you, your father is late ship tonight. You shall take me up there, and you will say nothing, do you hear?
Yes, Mama.
I have come up here to tell you what I do think of you all, because I have heard you are talking against my husband. Two things in this world I do hate. One is talking behind the back, and the other is life. If harm do come to my Gwillem, I will find out the men, and I will kill them with my hands. And that I swear by God Almighty. And there will be no hell for me. Nobody will go to hell for killing life.
Mother, listen!
I am not your mother, Daddy, when you are with these. You are life with them. And if your father comes to harm, you shall be the first to go.
It had begun to snow as we were coming up the mountain to the meeting. But now, as we left, the snow came down so fast that everything that was not blackness was a white blur. Somehow, holding my mother by the hand, I groped my way to the bridge. There we met the full wind. And it carried snow with it so that nothing could be seen through it. Careful and slow, holding on to the plank rail, we had to go. One wrong step and we would be in the river.
You can see.
I'm trying to see the logs under us, Mama.
Oh, Hugh, I'm afraid I'm going to fall.
Mama!
She slipped sideways. And almost she was falling in the river. I pulled and pulled to have her back, but she was too heavy. And when I knew I would lose her in the river, I knew there was only one thing to be done. I rolled over her into the river and stood there in the icy water up to my chest. I woke up in bed downstairs in the kitchen and saw the lamplight shining red on the wooden panels. I started to shout, but had no voice to shout with. I felt frightened, with a terrible fear. Then I heard Bronwyn singing quietly.
How plainly 'tis speaking, the wind through it singing, has language for...
Hugh, my little one, are you hurting with you?
Oh, there, Hugh. Very proud I am to have your name, lad.
Mm-hmm. He will do. But it is beyond me to say why, indeed.
Thank God, Dr. Richards. Your mother is doing very well, my son. And you have a new sister now. Thanks to you, she lives. Your old father is very proud of you, Hugh.
I had fever in the bones of my legs after that. For months I was only just living. I took no notice of what went on, except that it was Bronwyn who nursed me night and day. The day that Mother was coming down, there was great excitement. I was carried to the front room, and my father brought the new preacher in to see me.
You? This is the Reverend Mr. Merdin Griffith, the new preacher. Bow your head, my son.
No, leave your head on the pillow. Hugh Morgan, never let that light go from your eyes. Never mind how long you are here. Do you want to go out with the other boys?
Yes, indeed, Mr. Griffith. But my legs...
Are you sure you will go from here one day?
Yes, I am, sir.
And you shall see the first daffodil out upon the mountain, will you?
Yes, sir.
And I shall be waiting to take you to it.
And there, outside the house, they sang. My eyes filled with tears, and I turned my head. There was my mother in the doorway, watching me, with diamonds in her eyes.
You, my little one.
Are you better, Mama?
Better, boy? Of course I'm better. Do I look better?
Your hair is white.
The snow got into it. You had your old cabin.
Indeed, I shall always remember that day in the spring when Mr. Griffith came to the house and opened the door so that the sun shone in all around him.
Good morning, Mrs. Morgan.
Good morning, dear Mr. Griffith. That is good to see you.
I have come for you.
You?
This is the morning he's been waiting for.
The daffodils are out, Mama.
Oh, Hugh.
Where are your clothes, Hugh?
Under my pillow, sir.
Your pillow?
For these months. Ready for today.
Every day Mr. Griffith called to see me. And it was he who brought Owen and Davy and my father together. It was at a big meeting at this same chapel field that he spoke. And he spoke well and strong, befitting a man of God.
Men lose their birthrights only if they stop using the gifts given them by God. The first and greatest gift is prayer. Ask for strength of mind and a clear vision. Then sense. By prayer and good thought, you will conquer all enemies. And your greatest enemy now is coal. Coal is lifeless. But to subtle men, it lives in the form of gold. It is so many credit notes, so many loans, investments, interests. Your enemy is usury. You must fight. Fight. Fight now.
Mr. Griffith, are you coming outside your position in life? Your business is spiritual.
My business, my friend, is anything that comes between men and the Spirit of God.
Come, Daddy. You can take a message to the men on your side.
What is it then, Dada?
A message pledging my support of those with me. We will join with you, Daddy. For now, after hearing the word of a man of God, I begin to think maybe you have right on your side.
From Hollywood, the NBC University Theater is bringing you Donald Crisp in a radio version of Richard Llewellyn's How Green Was My Valley. If you are interested in supplementing your enjoyment of these NBC University Theater productions with home study under college supervision, be sure to listen to the announcement at the close of this program. And now, our intermission commentator, Professor Beaumont Brustel, poet, playwright, and professor of English at the University of Tulsa, Dr. Brustel.
Toward the close of the 19th century, there grew up in Scotland a whole school of literature known as the Care Yard School, a sort of cabbage garden school of literature which concerned itself with the lives of the village and country folk of Scotland. Little on the sentimental side, it eventually hardened itself into terrible pictures of the narrow and frustrated lives of the people of the entire British countryside, the countryside of Scotland, of England, of Ireland, of Wales. Out of this, nonetheless, have grown some of the major books of contemporary British literature. One is that picture of rich scope and plenty that Richard Llewellyn has given us in How Green Was My Valley. How Green Was My Valley is the story of a bonny valley doomed by the tragedy of supply and demand. It's a book filled with song and savagery, of simplicity and peasant cunning and love. Essentially, it is a biography in novelized form wherein a Welsh boy tells us the history not only of his Welsh mining family, but of the entire valley. He tells it to us after 50 years of living there, and he tells it to us with the green memory of childhood made gold with the passing of many years. Hugh Morgan, who tells the story, is simply a sensitive man who remembers. And because he is remembering a better thing that he knows now, he tells us about his valley with a wealth of detail and loving sentiment that, although it sometimes becomes a little long, is always vividly alive with the vitality of the teller. Hugh tells us about his family, and there are times when the reader feels that the entire valley must have been Hugh's family. Among the many, of course, a few stand out. Hugh's father, stubborn, short-sighted, but essentially thoughtful and well-meaning and gentle. Hugh's mother, busy and sensible, but essentially rebellious and with a fire stirring beneath her housewifely exterior. Strong among these people in the memory of Hugh is the minister, Mr. Griffith, who strives so earnestly and so blindly toward the right. The novel is big in characterization, and there are dozens of characters, no stinting here. But it is also big and beautiful in language, and the prose often sings after the fashion of the dialogue in the Irish plays of John Millington Synge. Also, the book is rich in peasant philosophy, a peasant philosophy which is simple and real and remarkably canny, and also has the literary advantage of being easily put into nuggets of prose. But most important in the book is the fact that in The Growth of the Boy Hugh, Richard Llewellyn has told us the story so that we are able to grow with Hugh, to discover his valley as he discovers it, and to be able to say with him, momentarily at least, of me was the valley, and the valley was of me. For the duration of the book, at least, Hugh takes us home with him.
Thank you, Dr. Bristol. Our radio version of How Green Was My Valley, starring Donald Crisp, will continue from Hollywood after a brief pause for station identification.
Mr. Tyser, I'd like to stop back in your class and get my pencil box and books.
Oh, by all means. I'll wait here for you. Hurry now.
Yes, sir.
Pick up your books, Morgan, and your blessed little pencil box, too. But I'm afraid the wind has been at them. You won't find them as you left them.
What have you done? What have you done to my things?
My pencil box was in three pieces. The pencils were all cut. Ink was on my books and wet in the grooves of the box. Drawing pens, ruler, pens, all broken, all chipped, all smashed.
What a long time you took, Morgan.
Perhaps he is used to taking his time.
This is your new teacher, Mr. Jonas. Have you been crying, Morgan?
Yes, but no matter.
You will address me as sir, or I will put a stick about you. Inside and sit down on the instant. Find a place. We have with us now, boys and girls, an intellectual giant. A modest scar, huh? But your books are in a dreadful state and your hands are filthy. If you are thinking of becoming a scholar at this school, you will have to adopt a more civilized way of living. Your dirty coal mining ways are not wanted here.
There was a break at 11 o'clock, and we all went out to the playground to eat. As soon as I came from the door, Mervyn Phillips pulled me by the arm.
Fight me, will you? Come you then.
I don't think we should in the schoolyard. I'll meet you after school, anywhere you please.
Howard, excuses you are making, is it? Here's one for you. Oh!
Now I'll square with you for the broken pencil box and the book.
What is this? What is this? Don't you hear the bell is gone? Are you all deaf? Dear, dear me. So our coal mining friend has a passion for fighting as well. Both of you, go to my desk. Get my stick. And wait until I come. Now, Mervyn Phillips, please be so good as to step forward. Now, will you please be so good as to make a back? You, Morgan, will you step up here, please? Will you please to bend across Mr. Phillips' back?
I only went home to drop my books, and I fled out on the mountain before my mother could look at me. I lay out there in pain in the dark, and after a while I must have fallen asleep, for when I woke, I could hear the sound of the choir from the chapel. I heard the rich male voices of the men of the valley, golden, brave, and clean. And it cleansed me somehow of the fear and the sense of shame for my world that Mr. Jonas and the others had tried to instill in me. For I knew that their voice was my voice, that I was part of them, and they were of me, and the valley was part of us all. Of me was the valley, and the valley was of me. And every blade of grass, and every stone, and every leaf of every tree, and every knob of coal were of me as my blood, my bones, or the notions of my mind. My valley. Oh, my valley within me. I will live in you eternally. Let death or worse strike this mind and blindness eat these eyes, if thought or sight forget you. For part of me is the memory of you, of your greens and browns, with everything of life happy in your deeps and shades, when you gave sweet sense to us, and the birds sang out of pleasure to be with you.
Looked all night. What has happened, boy? Why did you run from the house?
I ran because I was hurt, Bron. And because I was frightened.
Why didn't you go to your mother? Or to Dada?
Because it was something I had to face alone. But Dada and Mama did help Bron. Their life. Our life in the valley. That is something for a man to take pride in. Isn't it, Bron? It is not to be ashamed of. Nor the coal pits, Bron.
This is a good life, Hugh. No one need to be ashamed of it. Come home now, before you take chill. My man.
Mr. Griffith came round the following afternoon, and I told him about my fight at school. And that was the day Mr. Griffith met Angarad, my sister.
So, Hugh, you've had some trouble with the Philistines, is it?
Yes, sir. But I have mended the box, Mr. Griffith. It is like new again.
Let me see it, Hugh. Like new indeed. You are a carpenter, Hugh. Perhaps you would like to help me make the furniture for my new house?
Are you to have a new house, Mr. Griffith?
Yes, Angarad. And your brother Hugh to help me furnish it, I hope.
Why, I would be very pleased, sir.
Good. Then that's settled. And I can return to my flock and less weighty matters.
Wait, Mr. Griffith.
What is that, Ankara?
I want you to open a window for me. It's stuck.
Oh, this one here?
Yes, that is the one.
Why, it flew right up. It couldn't have been stuck very much, Ankara.
Thank you, Mr. Griffith. Very strong you are.
Why, it was... Nothing at all, Aunt Carrot.
In the weeks that followed, Angarad began to go out with Yester Evans, the son of the owner of one of the collieries. But I noticed that she spoke more and more with Mr. Griffith when he came to the house. And one day, when I went to his old house to help him move, I heard voices in the study. It was Mr. Griffith and Angarad.
I have thought and thought, but it still seems wrong.
Yes, you know, your friend here.
But courting you for months? Your mother is always saying how happy she is. You will have plenty all your days.
There is more than plenty to be had.
Oh, still it seems wrong for your sake.
Care a little more for your own business and less for my sake. If I wanted him, I could have him. I would rather have you.
Carrot, you are shameless.
Only to shame the devil with the truth. You are afraid what people will say.
Nothing of the kind. I am afraid that you will go threadbare all your life. Do you think I want to see the white come into your hair 20 years before its time? Shall we see our children growing up in the cast-off clothing of others? Shall we thank God in a house full of bits and presents that had outlived their use to the givers? No, I'm Carrot. I am a man. I can bear with such a life for the sake of my work, but I think I would kill if I saw it having an effect on you.
I crept from the hallway. I did not want to hear any more,
I had never known before that Mr. Griffith lived in a world of anything but comfort and happiness. And the next month he stood in the chapel after the services and he said,
I would like to announce to the congregation the calling of the banns for marriage between Miss Hankaret Morgan and Mr. Yeston Evans. I will call them again next week.
Mr. Griffith came a lot more to our house after Hankaret married and went off to London with Yeston. And he sat by the fire for a long time, night after night, smoking his pipe. As for me, I continued in school with Mr. Jonas. He rarely questioned me, and I rarely looked at him. Things might have gone on that way forever, except for Mr. Mothill, the master, sending for me one afternoon.
Morgan, I've been looking through your homework and comparing it with your school books. There is a difference which I shall merely hint at if I allude to it as startling. Why?
I don't know, sir.
Morgan, I had great hopes of entering you for a scholarship. I am sure your mother and father would be most pleased at that.
Yes, sir.
Then why is your schoolwork so immeasurably inferior to the work you do at home? Are you unhappy here?
I would like to learn with Mr. Tyser, sir.
I thought so. Yes, I hear your trouble with Mr. Jonas. I will look into it. Thank you, Morgan.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Morgan.
Yes, sir.
Remember this. The man who goes to the top is the man who has something to say and says it when circumstances warrant. Men who keep silent under duress are moral cowards. You understand me?
Yes, sir.
Take it to heart.
Well, Morgan, you have been to see Mr. Marshall. Was it a complaint of my teaching that you went?
You know that I was sent for, Mr. Jonas.
Indeed? Well, come outside of me, Master Morgan, so I may have the pleasure of introducing an emeritus professor to my colleagues. To Mr. Tiger, perhaps.
I shall sit here.
Come, I say.
Oh, the door, my dear.
There. You devil.
I won't take any more from you, Mr. Jonas. Do you hear? I won't take any more.
Morgan!
What?
Striking a teacher. Oh, this I will not permit. Your hat and your books and go home immediately. You're finished, Morgan. You're expelled.
Expelled from school is disgrace, deserved or not disgraced. And I had thought to have him a solicitor at the least.
He can still take the examination, Squillum.
I want him to go in the law or doctoring or something good. He has got a brain, so nothing is to stop him there.
Ask him what he would like.
Well, Hugh,
I will go down the colliery with you. No examination and no doctoring and no law.
Just like my others. Obstinate and stupid. You will take the examination, boy, and pass it. University then and a good try for some respectable job. Not coal cutting. What use to take brain down a coal mine?
There are men as good underground as on top, and perhaps a bit better. If he wants to go to the collieries with his dada, I will kiss him and say good.
The collery, dada.
Good, my little one.
That is the settler, then. He shall wait till there is an opening, and then work.
Good.
Good, is it? I am going to get drunk.
So I started working in the pits with my brother Ivor, Bronwyn's husband.
Now then, Hugh, I will cut the coal and you will push the lumps down the chute. Then go down and load all you can find down there into my tram, is it?
Yes, Ivor.
Right.
And then Angharad came back. Yeston had sailed for South Africa to set up a business, and she had come to the valley
to stay alone at Tyrancoid, the estate of the Evans family. White was her hair, plain even in the shadow of the room, and a starvation of light in her eyes.
Do you think you have grown, Hugh?
Yes. You have been away long.
How is he, Hugh?
Not as he was.
What is the matter with him? Is he ill?
Inside. In his eyes and voice. Like you.
Oh, go from here, Hugh. Go from here.
Mr. Griffith, am I disturbing?
Come you in, my little one.
Angharad is at Tyrancoid.
Yes.
She is with sickness.
Has she had a doctor?
No. Sickness of the heart it is.
I can do nothing, you.
Oh, you are a preacher, sir. Come unto me, all ye that are weary.
Oh, you. I must go to her indeed.
Eva and I were on the night shift when it happened. We were going up to our stall, and I had stopped to have a better grip of the pick.
Eva! Eva, look out! The roof's giving way!
Joe! I'm caught! I can't run!
Eva! Eva! Bronwyn, would you have me in the house to live and have my wages?
Your home is with Mama.
My home is wherever I am.
It will make trouble in the family.
Trouble, yes. If you say no, I will feel ashamed of being forward, and Mama will think I'm not good enough for you. Yes or no?
Yes.
Good. I will get my bed.
I was growing up now. I was a man now. I left the colliery when Davy went to London and became a blacksmith. Quiet those first few months were with Bronwyn, there was a line between us that was as plain as though put there fresh with chalk every day. If we came near each other, we were like hedgehogs with spine to keep us away, though we never showed it. The air between us was hot with hotness that only the two of us could feel. Our talk was empty, but we knew we were talking emptily, and why we never looked at each other. But growing up made me realize more things than my feeling for Bronwyn. It was causing me to realize gossip and malicious tongues and the evils they cause. It was in the blacksmith shop, and it was Tim Morgan, my helper, who taught me.
Hand me those tongs, Tim, please.
Here. Have them at you, then.
Come on. Working for me, you are. I had wanted them handed to me, not thrown.
As good to get them that way as any.
Manners, Tim. Lacking in your family, evidently.
Oh. Since when has your family come so good, then?
Please, sir, shut your mouth about my family.
You keep family matters out of your talk, then. A lot you have to talk about, you have. With a sister running up every preacher in the district. And a married woman looking.
I should brand you with an iron for that. Is that what they're saying in the valley?
That is what they are saying.
What are we to do, Bronwyn?
Tell Angara.
Oh, it will kill her.
Better to come from us.
Is it true, then?
Do I know? Is it business of mine? Are you questioning it?
Oh, but Bron, he is a preacher.
And a man? And Angara is a woman? How have you been looking at me this month?
Do they talk of you and me as well?
You are at work. You do not go to the shop.
Oh, the evil ones. If I could lay my fingers on them. How ashamed I am, Bron.
Ashamed of being a man or of being found out?
Bron, suppose I
I had been a fool these months.
Well, then, I suppose I would have been a fool, too.
Bronwyn.
Like Ivor, you are, see. And in you, I see him. In your voice, I hear him. Your eyes are like his. You put your boots on as he did. Tie your tie. Put your hair.
For Ivor's sake, then.
Did you think different, you?
Think? I don't know what I thought. For all my life, Bronn, before I even knew what love meant, I have been in love with you. It was nothing I thought. It was something I knew. Like my love for the valley. And for me, right or wrong, it will always be that way.
But there came a great change in the valley now. New men came into the valley for work, and many of the old men left. Owen was discharged and went to London with Davy to work for the Union. And Hangarad left, hearing, heard more rumors. And I knew what these rumors would finally lead to now, and they did.
Well, Hugh, I am glad you have come.
Thank you, Mr. Griffith.
Mentor and pupil we have been, but friends always. I was happy here, Hugh. Nothing was wrong with the garden. Only me.
Oh, do not say that, sir.
I am only sorry to go with nothing done. Sorry for nothing else.
You are really going?
I am going this morning.
Oh, it is sorry I am, Mr. Griffith.
Hugh, this watch my father gave me when I entered the ministry, I would like to give it you.
Take it.
It has marked time that I loved.
I thank you, sir.
No need for us to shake hands. We will live in the minds of each other, Hugh. My little one. Goodbye. With love.
The village was like a place of the dead for days afterwards. Our quietness was upon us. But the quiet did not last long. There was a great unrest in the town now with all the strangers coming among us. A strike was declared and it promised violence. There was talk about destroying the pumps and letting the pits be flooded. This my father would have nothing to do with. And he and some others of the elder men threatened to stay down the mines to protect them. And in the afternoon, when they were there for 3 days, there was a sudden outcry and the men came pouring out.
The pits are flooding! The pits are flooding! They smashed the
fire,
my father!
Where's my father?
I know not. Is he not with us?
No, no. Did you see him?
He's down there before the wharf on the wall stretches. If he's not here now, that's where he is. Mm-hmm. Down there.
I went down with some others. And we dug for Lord knows how many hours through the mass of fallen rock with the water lapping almost at our shoulders. We found Dada, and I looked once more into his clear blue eyes before they closed.
God could have had him in 100 ways, but he had to have him like that. A beetle under the foot.
He went easy, Mama.
Yes, I saw him. Easy indeed. Beautiful he was, and ready to come before the glory. Did you see his little hand? If I set foot in the chapel again, it will be in my box, and knowing nothing of it. Oh, Quill! Quill! Very empty I am without you, my little one. Sweet love of my heart, it is empty.
It is strange that the mind will remember so much. 30 years ago, but as fresh and as near as now. You have gone, all of you that were so beautiful when you were quick with light. Yet not gone. For you are still a living truth inside my mind. So how are you dead, my brothers and sisters and all of you, when you live with me as surely as I live myself? No. I will stand to say no and no again. Is Bronwyn dead who showed me the truth of the love of woman? Did my father die under the coal? But God in heaven, he is down there now dancing in the street and coming in a moment to smoke his pipe in the front room and pat my mother's hand. Is Mr. Griffith dead? Him, that one of rock and flame who was friend and mentor, who gave me his watch that was all in the world he had. Because he loved me. Is he dead? For if he is, then I am dead. And we all are dead, and all sense of mockery. How green was my valley then, and the valley of them that have gone.
Have been listening to How Green Was My Valley, an NBC University Theater production of the novel by Richard Llewellyn, starring Donald Crisp. If you wish to expand your knowledge and appreciation of literature, we suggest that you might enjoy the college-supervised courses now being offered in connection with the NBC University Theater. These courses are offered by the University of Tulsa in Oklahoma, Kansas State Teachers College, and the University of Louisville. For full information as to how you may enhance your knowledge through these home study courses, write to the NBC University Theater in care of the University of Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky, the University of Tulsa, Tulsa, Oklahoma, or Kansas State Teachers College, Pittsburgh, Kansas. Next week, be with us again at the NBC University Theater for a dramatization of a book that ushered in the jazz age, F. Scott Fitzgerald's first novel, This Side of Paradise. Our star, Mr. Guy Madison. And the following week, Elizabeth Bowen's sensitive novel, The Death of the Heart. How Green Was My Valley was prepared for radio by B. Edgar Marvin. Starred as narrator, Mr. Donald Crisp. Our cast included Ramsey Hill, Norma Varden, Constance Cavendish, John Ramsey Hill, Clark Gordon, Lawrence Krieger, Gilchrist Stewart, Eileen Erskine, Dan O'Herlihy, Terry Kilburn, Eric Snowden, Hugh Thomas, Donald Morrison, Tom Dillon, Raymond Lawrence. Your announcer, Don Stanley. Our intermission commentator was Professor Beaumont Brustel, whose commentary was recorded. The original music score was composed and conducted by Dr. Albert Harris. The director of the NBC University Theater is Andrew C. Love. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.